Welcome back, guys. We are Elevate, the podcast that elevates issues that matter most to you. Today, I have Sherelle Bird, my sister, with me, and I'm excited because she was with us last time a few months ago, and she talked about her work as a nonprofit leader and as an activist in South Georgia. So Sherelle today is going to be blessing us with some amazing topics, telling us what she's been up to over the last few months, and hopefully catching up.
Absolutely. Yes. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, so my goodness. Excited. I am happy you came back.
Yeah. So. I know we've been trying to get this together and see everybody's schedule. So we're here.
And we're here. And this is my sister, y'all. Sherelle is my sister, so I love her. Well, let me read your bio for those that may not formally know you. Sherelle's a co-founder and co-chair of Suiga Rising, a coalition that activates activism, organizes organizations, and moves movements forward. She is the founder of the Southwest Georgia Black Chamber, which is an organization that supports opportunities for African American businesses in Southwest Georgia. She's also the CEO of Lady Bird Event Enterprises, which encompasses the BAM agency and Lady Bird Event Design. Sherelle Bird uses her expertise in small business ownership, marketing, nonprofit management, and communications to assist businesses in creating professional brand and image. Sherelle lends her knowledge and expertise on the following boards, and there is a lot, so I think I may have to pick and choose, but the City of Albany Community and Economic Development Council, Southwest Georgia Community Action Council, SWGA Food Justice Coalition, Empower Health Community Advisory Council, Southwest Georgia Economic Alliance, Voices of Health, this is incredible, Doherty County Tobacco Coalition, Morehouse School of Medicine, PM3 Community Advisory Board, Advisory Board for the Department of Teacher Education at Albany State University, Georgia Community for Action and Alliance. That's incredible. And she's also a graduate of Westover High School and Georgia State University, and she currently resides in hometown Albany, Georgia. And proud mom of Shalice and Sheldon and her two fur babies. I love that.
Thank you.
And of course, we talked about before we started recording that you're about to be an empty nester.
I am. The kids are off to college. My daughter's about to finish her last year at Georgia State.
Wow.
And my son just started at Albany State. So
that's awesome. Yeah. What does that feel like? Because you're still very young.
It feels, and you know, when I had kids, I remember counting down like the years.
Really?
And was just like, okay, I'll be young enough when they get older to like enjoy life. So this is great. So,
I love it.
Yeah, so now I'm here. And I'm just really excited about, I don't know, the future. You know, like being able to have my time back and just, you know, do, just like be in my own space and just do
things
what
for
I
you.
Do for me.
Yeah. And I can imagine. So you have two that's in university currently, which means that you did I can't imagine what you had to do to get them there.
Yeah.
Like the work.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure they look back now and hopefully appreciate it. But we were the household. Like, we didn't watch television during the week.
That's incredible.
You know, we didn't eat a bunch of candy. You know, I was really shy. I think they think I'm a really strict parent. But it was like, you know, you have to focus. And I'm a pretty focused person.
Right.
And I wanted them to learn discipline early. And so I
That's
think
awesome.
That pays off eventually. So now they're both focused in school and doing well.
And you talk about focus, right? Because we know that you're also a nonprofit owner and or operator, and you run this nonprofit organization that has grown tremendously. What kind of focus does it take?
You know,
to do that.
Well, it's a lot. It's a big question. But like, we manage we have like 8 core initiatives.
Oh, wow.
And every core initiative needs its attention. So what I love about my work is that like, there's no day that's the same.
Yeah.
Every day I'm doing something different. I'm advocating for a cause. I'm somewhere traveling. I'm speaking. That's good. But also you have to know and be knowledgeable of all of those different things in some capacity and how it's impacting the lives of people.
Right.
So that takes laser focus to be able to make sure you understand and can advocate on all of these different levels.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a lot to balance.
Yeah.
It's like having multiple plates in the air at one time. But I think I'm
professional
learning
juggler.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love
that's
it.
What we do in this work, right? In the nonprofit space. So I'm sure you know that as well. So,
oof.
Yeah.
I can't imagine having 8 core initiatives that I'm focused on. So to be able to do that and to do it well is extremely exceptional.
And thankfully, I can't take all the credit. I've finally gotten to a place now where we have staff.
Yes,
you
know, since the last time
I
met
with you, I was the only staff person.
Wow.
And now we have a staff of 8.
Incredible.
And so as we're growing and getting more funding and partners, that funding is allowing me to get help with people that can take one of those initiatives and run with it. And so we have an amazing team and they're doing a great job with it. So they keep me balanced.
That's awesome. And especially when you have that team behind you.
Absolutely.
Because especially in the work that you do, it requires a village. It requires a collective because that's what your work is.
Right.
So tell us more about, for those that haven't heard about Suiga Rising, what is Suiga Rising? What have you been doing over the last, say, 6 months?
So Suiga Rising, we're a nonprofit advocacy organization. We're nonpartisan. And we really, our mission is to mobilize people and resources to improve the quality of life of marginalized, historically marginalized populations in rural communities. Mm-hmm. So we're specifically focused on Southwest Georgia, which is our name, Suiga. It's an acronym for Southwest Georgia.
Yes.
And so we are the voice for the voiceless. You know, we get
Love
out
it.
Here and we advocate
yeah.
to federal, state, and local officials to be able to help people get what they deserve and what they need in their communities.
Yeah.
But we don't just stop there. We really are about empowering people to
yes.
use their own voice. Like, mm-hmm. we don't want to always advocate for folks,
right.
but we try to build movements and we try to teach people the principles of organizing and activism so they can get out here and they can fight for themselves. And
yeah.
we want to fight alongside them. Mm-hmm. And so we do, like I said, have 8 core initiatives. So
right.
I'll try to run through them really quickly. So rural health is a big one. And I'll talk a little bit about the work we've done there. Food justice, civic engagement, Q justice, which is our climate, utilities, and environmental justice.
Awesome.
Racial equity, which
wow.
is like kind of central to all of our work.
Yeah.
Historic and cultural preservation, criminal justice reform and public safety, and then economic justice.
Wow.
So all of those things, while it seems like a lot, they're so intersectional.
Yeah.
So it's like racism and poverty really...
Oh, yeah.
helps to create this environment where these things are impacting lives of people in an adverse way.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So you'll see how many, like, rural health and food justice are so related.
Yeah.
And then you'll see how economic justice and housing and utilities, all of those things tend to be related to each other.
Absolutely.
So that's how our work is connected in many ways. So it feels like we're juggling a lot, but, like, a lot of times those things are, like, we're right there in the same space a lot of times.
Right.
So I will say, since we last talked, one of the things that we've been working on this year is, I will say, Medicaid unwinding. A lot of people aren't familiar with Medicaid
yeah.
unwinding. Have you
heard
of that?
I'm like, what is that? It's
right.
coming. I haven't.
So during the pandemic, so if you're on Medicaid and mm-hmm. you have Medicaid as your primary insurance mm-hmm. For your health, during the pandemic, well, before the pandemic, you would have to re-enroll every year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Since the pandemic, when the pandemic hit, they ceased re-enrollment. And so for
okay.
those, like, 3 years of the active pandemic, you mm-hmm. did not have to go through that re-enrollment process.
Right.
A lot of new people came into Medicaid when they were on the pandemic and they got pandemic Medicaid and did not have to re-enroll.
Right.
Well, the federal government says, well, let's start that back again. And so mm-hmm. this year they decided to start this re-enrollment process.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people don't know, like, if you just got Medicaid during the pandemic and never had to re-enroll, this will be your first time experiencing that process.
Wow.
And then for other people, a lot of people just don't know. They haven't gotten the notification. They haven't seen the notices that said,
right.
you have to re-enroll.
Yeah.
And so the state of Georgia is projected to have at least 500,000 people that will lose their Medicaid.
That's a lot of
if they
people.
Don't re-enroll, and they probably will. And so that's the projection.
Wow.
And so we've been doing all kinds of outreach, letting people know, like, hey, you have to re-enroll. You cannot miss your re-enrollment date. You have to check your Gateway account
right.
and make sure your information is current so that you can get the notification
yeah.
so you don't lose. The last thing you want,
mm-mm.
especially as a parent, if your
right.
child is on, like, state Medicaid,
yeah.
is for you to go to the hospital for an emergency and
yeah.
find out you're
you
not
don't have
covered.
Insurance.
And
right.
that is absolutely what's happening. And so as a result of that, we're collecting stories from people that have lost their Medicaid. Because like this is a mess. Like this is just one of the things where government really didn't think things through. Mm-hmm. They knew that this was going to be a mess. They're still hiring people to even do the re-enrollment process while it's happening. So it's just insane.
What came up with this policy. Let's do this, but
this
not
fun. Let's just
a
do
plan
this
for proper implementation of it.
Absolutely. And so what's ultimately going to impact our single Black women, mothers, people that are elderly, lower income. Those are the folks, like those marginalized groups that are going to lose their Medicaid and be the most impacted by this. So we're collecting stories right now to understand how this is impacting folks so that we can go back and advocate. So that's one big thing that that's we're powerful. Working on. And then we also actually just went to D.C. to talk on the federal level about medical debt, which is another issue that's impacting people. Yes. Georgia is one of the highest states of uninsured in the nation. I think we're like in the top five for uninsured Georgians. And we also have a huge coverage gap, which is why we advocate for Medicaid expansion.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people that still are not able to get Medicaid because of this coverage gap. Mm-hmm. And so we went to D.C. to like talk to them and to bring people's stories to the legislators and to the ones that can create the rules and policies to tell them like how Medicaid is impacting people's lives and that, you know, we go to the hospital to try to get help and to try to be whole. And sometimes we come out worse than when we walked in because of the financial burden that we have from being taken care of and having our needs met in a hospital.
Right.
You walk out of the hospital and now you get collections calls and you can't get credit and you can't buy a house because you have this huge medical debt on your on your credit. And so we were excited that like maybe 2 days after we left DC, we found out that they're actually going to move forward with some proposed legislation to help to reduce medical debt here in America. So that is
incredible. That's a huge
win. We never have like that type of like reaction
that's a huge win
in our work. And so we were super excited about that.
That is, you guys are trailblazing, the Southwest area. Well, it sounds to me like it's more than Southwest Georgia, because even legislation you're advocating for is on a federal level. So, and essentially, it's impacting a lot of Americans.
And what we do, what's become kind of our niche is, we a lot of times will see issues being discussed and they're discussed from an urban lens and the rural voices are left out. So we're typically the organization now that folks call on to say, hey, let's hear how this is impacting rural communities. Let's hear how this is impacting people of color living in rural communities.
Yeah.
So we're always on the forefront of making sure that rural voices are at every table and that people are not, you know, especially here in the state of Georgia, we always try to tell folks there is life outside of Atlanta.
We're in Georgia, you're just like Atlanta.
Life outside, right? Like Georgia is, and it's like, no, there's a whole state outside of Atlanta, and they have totally different needs and totally different issues. And a lot of times these issues impact people the same, but it looks different. It feels different when you're in rural communities because you don't have the same legislation and policies and change that's happening in more progressive parts of the state.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that takes a lot more advocacy. And like in Atlanta, there's like probably 50 advocacy organizations on one street in Atlanta. But in the rural communities, there's just not. So there's not enough voices that are advocating for folks in rural communities, and we're glad to be able to fill that space.
That's awesome. What are some of the issues that rural communities are dealing with? For those that are just completely disconnected, we're like, look, we're from the city. We don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what's the extent?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'll tell you one example of our work. Where we started was with utilities.
Wow.
So Georgia is, again, one of the states with the highest rates of energy costs.
I just saw my power electric bill the other day. I am not happy.
It's not a good thing. And it's because of so many things, right? Like we have hotter summers, so we're pulling more air. We have colder winters a lot of times. Like our winters are getting colder.
Right.
But in the South, in rural communities, in South Georgia specifically, we have really outdated housing stock. So our houses were built in like the 1950s. So the codes are outdated, and like they're not weatherized. They're not, they don't have energy efficient upgrades and things like that. And people can't afford those things.
Yeah.
Not to mention, just in Albany alone, like since 2017, we've had tornadoes. We've had in 2018 a Category 4 hurricane to hit Albany, and like that's, we've never seen that type of natural disasters before due to climate change. And people want to say, oh, climate change isn't real. Yeah, it's real.
It is very real.
We've never seen a Category 4 come in that far inland in the state of Georgia. And so that impacts, like, those houses are still in disrepair, some of them, and people are still living in them. And so those are the types of things that drive up utility costs. So people are paying anywhere from $800 to $1,000 a month, we've learned. And these are folks living in low-income housing and public housing, like struggling, like burdened to pay their bills.
Horrible.
These are seniors, like fixed income, that are struggling to pay their utility bills. And so when we started peeling back the layers of the issue and really just trying to understand, like, why are these bills so freaking high? That's when we started understanding it's a climate change issue. It's a housing issue.
Right.
It's all of these issues that really, you know, you come to Atlanta and they're building new houses all the time. So you don't have to worry about energy efficiency because you can move into a new apartment complex. But you don't see that kind of development in rural communities. And so people are stuck in these older homes and in these landlord situations where they're at the mercy of their landlords to repair the homes. And that's just
not happening.
So that's just an example of the work. So that speaks to utilities,
quality
of
life,
housing issues. And we know housing is a social determinant of health.
That's
some of the work. That's what it looks
that's
like.
That's huge.
Yeah, and that's, like, when I say it's all intersectional. That's when all of those things come together to make this huge problem, and now folks are paying $1,000 a month.
I can't imagine. It reminds me of a story of a man. I think he was about 70 years old. His birthday was going to be the next day, and I was campaigning and organizing at the time, and was knocking on his door, just talking to him about what are the things you want to see. And he's like, I want to show you my utility bill. And he goes and grabs his bill, and I think it was around, if I remember correctly, $600 and something for 1 month. We're talking about a one-bedroom apartment. I can understand how he was getting billed that much money for a small apartment.
Right.
And so he was also a veteran, also obviously a senior citizen,
right,
really didn't know how to advocate for himself. And this is in Mableton.
Yeah.
So we're not, you know, obviously not really rural, but just thinking about how those issues are happening. So I can't imagine, we're talking about the areas like Albany,
right,
you know, how these issues may be a lot more exasperated.
And it's a statewide issue. And we really do need policies at the state level that are going to regulate energy.
Please.
They're going to regulate landlords
Absolutely.
To make sure that they're taking care of their properties. So he's at the mercy of a landlord
who,
if he doesn't fix up his property, the burden's going to be on him to take care of the high utility costs. So there's not a lot of legislation in the state of Georgia, unfortunately, because a lot of our state representatives and legislators are landowners or property owners.
Makes sense.
And so they're not going to make the rules that regulate them and get into their bottom line, you know. And so that's our fight typically. There's a lot of preemption laws that even don't allow local governments to be able to regulate property owners the way they really need to be regulated to protect the people. So
it's like almost like we need to, it sounds like even like some laws or policies may be also like antiquated. I wonder, like, when is the last time we've looked at these laws and had some change around
it? And I think it's honestly, and this goes into our conversation earlier, this is why we got to vote.
Yes.
This is why we got to run for office. Like,
yes.
We need people that, because a lot of times our legislators are older.
Right.
They're wealthier.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not impacted by high utility rates. They can
Absolutely.
Pay their bills. They can buy a home that's energy efficient. So they don't have to think about these things.
Yeah.
We need common folks like us that are close to these issues, that are at the state capitol, that are creating laws because we know how this impacts everyday Georgians.
Right.
And so I think that's obviously where voting is so important.
Yeah.
We got to vote for folks that are speaking to these issues.
Yeah.
And if we don't see people speaking to these issues, that means you need to be the person
to
jump into office and make the laws that we need for the state.
That's such a big task. Like,
you
know, like just like going back to the voting part, a lot of people don't vote. I remember knocking on a door And it was an older gentleman. He had to be probably about 74. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to get him to go out to vote and give him some literature. And he's like, I haven't voted. And I think he told me about 50 years.
Oh, no.
And it just broke my heart because I was like, wow. Yeah. 50 years.
Yeah.
And you can sense and feel like the disappointment. He's like, nothing's ever going to change. It's never going to change.
Yeah.
And so many people, they're walking around and they don't feel like things are ever going to change.
Yeah.
And things are always going to be the same.
Yeah. And I think that's where education comes in. And that's part of the work that we do. Like our civic engagement work is like central to what we do.
Right.
Because we really work hard to help people understand, like, your everyday life is politics. Like, somebody has made a decision about every single part of your life.
Absolutely.
What you eat, how you drive, what your house looks like, how many trees are in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. All of that is a decision by a legislator somewhere that you hired with your vote. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't like it, you can fire them also with your vote. And then I think, too, we do get into a situation where we vote and then we don't do anything else.
That's good.
And you can't just vote. You have to vote and hold them accountable. You have to vote show up. You have to go to these meetings. That's where a lot of these conversations are happening about the things that govern your day-to-day life. And a lot of times people just vote and they go home. And so we encourage folks like, no, stay in their face. You have the right to call them. Yeah. You have the right to email them. You have a right to show up at the people's house at the state capitol in Atlanta.
That's right.
Like, that's your house.
Right.
You pay for that with your tax dollars. And so you have the right to show up and knock on their door. You know, I go to DC all the time, but I'm not special. You know, it's like anyone can go to DC. Anyone can talk to their state senator. Like, you can walk into their office. You don't need an appointment. Mm-hmm. And so people don't realize the power that they have. And that's unfortunate. I think we in America have shifted the power to where it seems as though the politicians, we work for them. Mm-hmm. And no, they work for us. They work at our pleasure, you
that's
know.
Right.
And so we have to keep that present in the minds of our citizens, like they work for you.
And I love that it's shifting the power back, power that has already been there but has not been recognized because of things like structural racism and poverty that makes you feel powerless. Because if you're struggling for your basic needs to be met, how powerful do you feel? So I think it's reminding people that and regardless of what your situation is or what you're facing, you still have the power to advocate for yourself and for change.
And I think, too, we in America have, like, made our political leaders celebrities.
I think so.
You know, and also celebrities are running for office and winning the highest seats in the land.
That's
crazy, but it's happening. And so I think, you know, in America, celebrity is like on this pedestal, like they're all powerful. And, you know, we have to shift that. Like, they're not celebrities. They're servants. Right. They're public servants.
Absolutely.
And so we do ourselves a disservice when we kind of get into that aggrandizement of how politics are today.
Right.
And we got to get back to the you know, there's the humility of politics.
That's
incredible. What's missing.
Now, how do we get back to that? What do you suggest?
Again, I think it's time for common folk to get out here and run for these offices.
That's
and really, you know, I think, you know, especially like I look in, even in our community, we just had a candidate forum and everything that we heard was we have too many lawyers that are legislators. We have too many people that are, you know, these rich, older, like if you look at our state, our federal legislators, all of them are like in their 80s.
Yeah.
All of them are snow white, you know? Mm-hmm, and so it's like, we need folks that are younger. We need more diversity. We need people that would have lived experience to be in these seats. And we have to encourage that in our communities that, no, you have a voice and you can be up there too and get behind those types of people. I think that's the challenge too, is like people that are candidates have a lot of money, you know, to run campaigns, and common people, a lot of times we don't have a lot of money.
That's right.
We don't have a lot of time.
That's
you know,
right.
We're raising our families. We're working.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do you support just regular working class folks to be able to get them into these seats? And so I think that's a conversation we just have to have in our country about shifting the power from these older white-haired legislators to younger people with lived experience.
Yeah. And lived experiences are so powerful.
It's powerful.
That's what's really missing from a lot of the decisions that are made is lived experience. Yeah. When it's not your reality, you are completely disconnected from how that policy or that decision is going to impact the day-to-day of the average person.
Right.
So it's a very important that we have, you know, these kind of people at the table, like
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, and you.
And then how do we get our younger people involved? So, like, Generation Z, you know, millennials are old now, so we can't call them young anymore.
Right.
But Gen Z, the alpha generation, how do we activate them and get them involved too?
You know, it's honestly, and that's one of the things I love about our organization. We're very multi-generational. So
we have
a lot of young folks. We have older people on our team.
Right.
Because that is so important. Like, young people have some of the most amazing ideas.
Absolutely.
But they're not always given voice. They're not always given platforms to be able to express those ideas. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually right now kicking off a higher education campaign, civic engagement campaign, so that we can engage college students, not just coming to them because, oh, we want you to vote and we want you to understand, but to show them how to move power, teaching them what their power is in your college, in your community, and how you can use your voice for advocacy too, how we're teaching them how to organize themselves. Mm-hmm. And we just don't do enough of that. Young people in most communities tend to be this kind of forgotten voice, kind of pushed to the side.
Absolutely.
And so we need to embrace, like, preparing them to run for office too.
Yeah.
And not thinking, oh, they're young, so they don't have experience, so I'm not going to vote for them.
Right.
But thinking that, like, they are a vital part of your community as well.
Absolutely.
And if you, and I don't want to sound cliche, but they are the future. Like, if you want your community to thrive and survive.
Right.
Older people are going to die very soon, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got to keep a pipeline of young people in your community. Mm-hmm. That's one of our challenges. We have significant brain drain where young people are leaving our community. We always say graduation day is like the most bittersweet day in our community because while we're celebrating all of these wonderful graduates, most of them leave our community and never come back because we don't have opportunities for them. And the reason we don't have opportunities for them is because they're not at the table.
Right.
Making the decisions and making the and we've not empowered them to be able to have a voice to create the community they want to live in.
Right.
So they go off to Atlanta and to all these other places. So that's a whole other issue, you know, I could talk about forever in rural communities that are struggling because the young people just they're leaving and not coming back.
I hear so many stories of young people or just people that are from rural communities that migrate to major cities like Atlanta. And they're like, there's nothing there for me.
No.
And, you know, to hear that this is a huge issue.
Yeah.
So I thought it was maybe just a few, but I'm hearing that this is a huge issue.
Huge issue.
That once they get a certain age, they're leaving out of the community and they're going somewhere else.
And they're going to where the jobs are, where they can raise families, where there's lifestyle and there's things to do that are exciting that you just don't have in rural communities. And again, I think it's because you have the wrong people at the table that are not progressive.
Yeah.
And they want to see rural communities stay, these little small towns, these bedroom communities, these retirement communities.
Right.
But the problem with that is their infrastructure is crumbling because you don't have a workforce there that can keep sustaining that community. And so that's why we see a lot of rural communities are falling behind as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
You remind me of Shirley Chisholm.
Oh, that means so much to me. She's one of my heroes. Thank you.
I just see like her all over you and I don't know why.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much.
Yes. You, like truly, like you are like the mantle carrying it on.
That means you have no idea. Like Shirley Chisholm was a giant. Like her voice was a giant. So if I could even be a small part of who she was, that just means so much.
I literally feel like you are. Yeah.
Thank you.
Right in that pathway, that journey, especially the passion, it literally exuberates from you. Like you can see this is what you eat, sleep, and breathe. This is what you love to do. You
Absolutely.
Can sense that through just the way you talk about it.
It's so funny, too, because my mom used to call me Lucy from Peanuts. I don't know if you remember Lucy. So
I
was always like super.
That.
You didn't watch Peanuts, the cartoon. And Lucy was super bossy. And I was like the one, the like chatter box growing up. And it's like now I understand, you know, like I get to use that.
Yeah.
You know, I get to use that leadership. And sometimes
That's
I can
right.
get bossy and push people to do the right thing.
It takes that.
You know? So yeah,
that's right.
I'm excited that I get to use my Bossy Lucy.
That's
voice
right.
To help my people. Help
Let's
the community.
Go Bossy Lucy. That's right. I love it. And then as we're closing, what is one piece of legislation you would love to see pass? I know you're working on a number of things, but if there is one that you would love to see happen, what would that be?
There's so many. And I don't know what this will look like, but I would say we got to protect Black mothers.
Absolutely.
We have to protect Black mothers. Georgia is the second at the bottom for Black maternal mortality.
Ooh.
And so it is literally like for you to have a baby in the state of Georgia is like a miracle.
Wow.
And that should not be. Like, that is very scary. I have a daughter.
Very
you
scary.
Have a daughter that one day may have a child in the state of Georgia.
Right.
And she has like a 1 in 5 chance of survival.
That's really sad.
Our babies, our infant mortality rates are abysmal.
Wow.
And so that would be the one thing. Like, we have to do something to address that. We have to figure out why that's happening. We know why from a, you know, kind of a racism standpoint.
Absolutely.
But it's like, how do you legislate that?
Right.
It's really hard. And even if you create laws, like you can't legislate hearts.
Mm.
And that's the hardest thing. And so I think that would be my number one thing is like, how do we protect our Black mothers? How do we protect our young people? And how do we stop them from just dying over simple things that we found in our research, and we work with Morehouse School of Medicine, their Center for Maternal Health Equity, that many of the things they're dying for are preventable.
Wow.
And that's like the knife that's like twisting the knife. Not only are they dying, but it was something that could have been prevented. And so how do we create legislation and laws that protect Black women and allow us to do what we are naturally born to do? And that is be maternal and
that's
bring
right.
life into this world.
Wow.
Without losing ours.
And to backtrack, you cannot legislate hearts. That's so powerful.
Yeah.
So powerful. But you know what? You have the right heart to legislate. So
thank you.
You know, we need you in
you.
Those places to continue doing what you're doing. You're doing incredible work. And I'm proud to be your
My
fellow
sister. Yes.
That is watching all of the just the, you rising and to your new podcast as well. If you can just. Soundbite,
real
how
quick.
Do people...
Yeah, so we have a New South is Rising podcast.
Yes.
It's amazing. We sit on the porch and we have these conversations in a
yes.
deep way. And we really are about the making sure we dispel the disinformation and misinformation.
Yeah.
And just like the rumors and myths about Black folks in the South, that we aren't who you think we are. Like we are like very open to having these conversations. We have
yes.
some deep conversations about some real things. And
I
so A New South is Rising podcast is on yes. YouTube. You can find us there. We do have a Facebook page as well. And then you can also follow our Saliga Rising page and you'll be able to, that'll be able to send you to our YouTube page. So
amazing.
Yeah, check us out.
I cannot wait, guys, to hear this podcast. I already subscribed, so tomorrow I'm going to be listening and get my little Southwest Rising on
Yay.
While I'm driving.
Awesome.
Yes, I can't wait. But it's been such a pleasure. Sherelle, thank you for being with me. Thank
Absolutely.
You for all that you do. I don't know how you do it.
I don't do
but
it alone.
Thank you.
I have a team, so yeah.
But thank you for the tenacity. It takes a lot. It takes the right heart. It takes tenacity, character, and so much more to do the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much.
And please keep on pushing because we need you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we do. Yes. And guys, we appreciate you too for tuning in and for listening. If this inspired you, we want you to go ahead and share it out to a friend, a colleague, or someone that you care about. We believe in bringing content that elevates you and that inspires you. Please stay tuned. We will be back next week with more content that inspires you. Love you guys so much. Stay tuned.